you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome to the show, everyone. June 4, 2009. It's a Thursday. Welcome to 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. Last night, I got together with Dave Champion, host of the Dave Champion Show here on RBN. Again, he's on Central Time, 3 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we got together and went to Vegas. Neither the girl I'm dating or the girl he's dating really had any interest in seeing the new movie Star Trek. And it looked pretty cool, much, much cooler than any other Star Trek movie in the past. So we buddy up, head into town, and grab some chow, go sit down and watch Star Trek. And I got to tell you, pretty neat. And the reason I bring it up is there's actually a couple of scenes in there that employed some fairly reasonable tactics, tactics of the future. However, I did find it rather humorous that in one scene you actively saw these phasers with recoil, which had never happened before. But a pretty decent flick. Do you guys just happen to understand at least the basic idea of a tactical prowess? They can read a situation, go into a basic tactical formula, and work together having never done it before, which is truly kind of the answer. The idea is this. Three things will get you through a gunfight, and I have professed this for years. One is gun handling. That's keeping your gun up and running, keeping the ammo feeding into the chamber and the ammo going bang every time you press the trigger. So gun handling. The second is marksmanship, which is being able to actually hit your target. And then the third is tactics. And the simplest definition I can offer for tactics is this: your ability to not get shot in a gunfight. That's as simple as I can make it. Now, of course, there's large definitions of tactics, but Bill Carnes' definition is your ability to not get shot in a gunfight. If you can keep your gun running, hit your targets, and not get shot in a gunfight, that's a good thing. What you really need to do, however, is you need to practice these sorts of things. Gun handling and marksmanship never changes. Tactics will change. They are a moving, evolving, living, breathing thing. If you have a basic knowledge, basic understanding of tactical movement and tactical decision-making, and you've got someone else with a very similar knowledge of tactical movement and tactical decision-making, you can, in an instant, having never practiced it before together, actually do rather well together. The thing is, you each have to have a pretty good, solid understanding of tactics to do this. If you actually practice together, it's going to be even better because you know what to expect from each other. So one may be a little bit more aggressive in some areas, while the other one might be a little reserved in some areas. But you have to have a good, solid understanding of tactics before you can actually ever consider yourself to be lucky enough to make it through a deadly encounter. If you don't have tactics, you don't have what it takes to get through, unless you're just playing really lucky. So those of you lottery winners out there, you may not need to study tactics. However, I wouldn't let it ride that whole stream of luck. So we're going to talk a little bit about this today. Stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio, right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back from the break. Let me read to you a definition of tactics as found on Wikipedia. A tactic is a conceptual action. In military usage, a military tactic is used by a military unit of no larger than a division to implement a specific mission and achieve a specific objective, or to advance towards a specific goal. A tactic is implemented as one or more tasks. So when it's referred to in a military stance, what happens is they actually will come up with a plan, and that's called a tactic. Tactics, as in plural, is an ongoing evolutionary thing that happens continuously. It flows within an armed encounter that you would be in. We're going to keep this away from police tactics, away from military tactics, and keep this more so into individual tactics. Now, you have to have a good relative understanding of tactics before you can implement them. Things such as this. The uses of cover and concealment. Now, just for very basic definitions, cover is bulletproof. Concealment is not. We've talked about this before. Cover is something that you can get behind. Somebody can shoot at you trying to shoot through the cover, and the bullets won't go through. So let's say, for instance, a fire hydrant. If you can tuck behind a fire hydrant, that's good cover. If you can get behind a utility pole, like a big telephone pole, that's good cover. If you can get behind the engine block of a car or any part of a Chrysler Imperial from the 1970s, because that's a tough SOB, those are cover. The glass windows of the cars are not. Okay. Concealment is something that you cannot be seen through, but is not bulletproof. Like if you hide behind a curtain, the curtain is concealment, not cover. In military, they have portable concealment, and that is in the form of a smoke grenade. They'll take a smoke grenade, throw it out between themselves and the bad guys cannot see what's going on. They have this screen. The bullets can certainly travel through that smoke screen. So that's concealment. Now that we understand the difference between cover and concealment, let's realize that the majority of things in today's society are not cover. They are concealment. Lots of high-tech different plastics and things such as that. We're getting much more rigid material out of much more lighter weight, materials. You can take these lightweight materials, make them very rigid and very durable, and then that's what most of the stuff, these man-made materials, come out to the world as. And bullets go right through that stuff. I'll tell you one thing. I love doing ballistics tests where we actually shoot at stuff. Now, I am not one of these guys that takes all of his old crap out of the garage and takes it out to the desert, shoots it full of holes, and leaves it there. I think that is absolutely despicable. And if you're somebody who does that, I despise what you do. The only thing I have ever left out in the desert when it comes to shooting is I have taken some large pails, like some 5-gallon pails, and I put about 4.5 gallons of water in it. And I put it into one of these great big freezers, like either the big upright freezer or the chest freezer. And I will freeze these big old buckets of water. Then you can take those things out as long as you're not going too far. Keep them in a cooler or something. Take them out and use those to shoot at if you want to see something actually, kind of explode. Because all it is it's exploding frozen water. And when it dissipates, all you're doing is watering the tundra. And actually fill up a gallon of water and have something to shoot at, a 5-gallon jug. It's pretty easy. So anyhow, that's kind of a neat thing to shoot at if you want to see something react and you have smaller pieces so it gets a little bit tougher. Take a few of those out, try it. It's kind of neat. It's fun. If you want to go out and spend some money, I mean, you can go out and get watermelons or cantaloupes. Otherwise, targets are fine. Standard paper targets are just plain fine. Anyhow, with this being said, you have to understand really kind of the basic form of tactics that within today's society, most stuff, as I said, is not bulletproof. Bullets will go through a lot of stuff. Again, when I do ballistics tests, we take stuff out, we'll actually set up kind of a scientific idea of this whole thing. You've certainly seen in the movies where somebody kicks a dining table or a coffee table over, hides behind it, and they use that as cover. That's just concealment, folks. I got to tell you, somebody kicks a dining table or a coffee table over and they hide behind it, all you got to do is shoot right through it. Same thing with pretty much any interior door you'll ever find or any interior wall you'll ever find in a modern home. You just don't see the bullets stopping in that. You see them tumbling right through that thing or piercing right through it. So just keep that in mind. Some ideas of cover in your house. Let's say you have a fireplace in your house. Well, that fireplace is going to be made of stone or brick or cinder block or something like that. That's a good piece of cover. If you own a gun safe, the gun safe itself and or the door, if you're able to open the door and hide behind it, that's good cover. If you have a waterbed, waterbeds are really good cover until the water leaks out from all the bullet holes. But water stops bullets fantastically, especially high-speed rifle rounds. Now, you would think that a high-speed rifle round would penetrate right through. But no, actually, the slower subsonic handgun rounds have more penetration. We did an exercise with a 55-gallon drum of water. And with this 55-gallon drum of water, we shot at it with 308s and even a 300 Winchester Magnum. And there's one hole going in, but no hole coming out. Then we shot at it with a 45 ACP, very slow handgun round. And it went through both sides. It actually had two leakers. So that's not to say that that happens in the average body of majority water, which would be any person or animal you'd normally shoot. But what it does show is when you're just dealing with H2O, the high-speed rounds get into what's called hydrodynamic shock, and they end up with a hydrodynamic stop as they're going through. It's an incredible phenomenon that works out. Anyhow, tactics means being out of the range, out of the direct line of sight of the bad guy's bullets. And if that's by putting a piece of cover between you and the bad guy, that's fine. Keep also in mind that when you find yourself a good piece of cover, you want to keep a little bit back from it, 3 or 4 feet. All the time you're going to see people crowding cover. You see cops crowd cover when you watch TV shows. You see anything out of Hollywood, movies, TV shows, you see them crowding cover. They get right up on it. That is not the way to do it. The reason is because of a little phenomenon known as the angle of deflection. Now, let's say that we're going to shoot a game of pool. Right? You take a ball and you shoot it into the side cushion at a 30-degree angle. Unless you put some sort of spin or English on it, it's going to bounce off at that same 30 degrees. If you hit it into the cushion at a 45-degree, it'll come off at 45. If you shoot it in there at a 15-degree angle, it'll come off at 15 degrees. Not the same with bullets. Bullets will begin to flatten out and then take a very, very known path. They will have an angle of deflection of 5 to 7 degrees off of the piece of cover. They're either going to penetrate or they're going to ricochet off. And the ricochet is going to be at 5 to 7 degrees when you're shooting at an odd angle. Now, if you're shooting at something that's strictly bulletproof and you shoot it straight on, it can actually ricochet back 180 degrees. I got hit by one of my own rounds one time. I got the scar to prove it. By shooting at a piece of bulletproof Lexan. Actually, it was bullet-resistant Lexan. The particular round that I fired happened to be, it was bulletproof to that particular round. Came back and hit me. So be very careful of that sort of thing. But let's say you're shooting at a car. You're either going to penetrate into the sheet metal of the car, or it's going to deflect off of the car. It's going to deflect off at 5 to 7 degrees. Now, why is this important? If you are 3 to 4 feet back from the car, then if somebody's shooting at you, they have to actually hit you. If you're crowded up against the cover, they can shoot you or 2 to 3 feet inward on the car, and the deflection of that round will come off of the car and hit you. So you become a huge target. If you're crowding your cover, you could have 3.5 feet worth of the cover and yourself as the available area to shoot at, and the bullet will eventually hit you. It'll hit the piece of cover, come off at 5 to 7 degrees, and then get you if you crowd your cover. If you're 3 to 4 feet back, that is not so. They actually have to hit you. You, on the other hand, are using all of that cover to hit someone else who is hopefully exposed or crowding their cover. Hopefully everybody understands this. I don't have a little teleprompter that I can put up there or a big screen behind me that I can draw this out as I speak. That would be helpful. But just keep in mind, if a bullet doesn't penetrate through a piece of cover, it will deflect off, and the term is ricochet. It will deflect off and ricochet at 5 to 7 degrees will be the angle of deflection. So again, for the average person, 5 to 7 degrees, you got to be back 3 or 4 feet from your cover. If you have a bad guy that you're shooting into, they take cover behind something and they crowd it, which is probably what's going to happen, you don't have to shoot them. You can actually just shoot right in front of them on the piece of cover within a couple of feet, and that round will ricochet and get anything that is exposed out 5 to 7 degrees. So that's a pretty good useful bit of information for you, both as the good guy and shooting at the bad guy. So 3 to 4 feet back, lean out a little bit. They have to hit what little bit of you is exposed, which is pretty difficult under a stressful situation, especially against an untrained adversary, which is who you are most likely to meet on the street. Stick around. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. More to follow after the break.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so now that we understand cover and concealment, angle of deflection, we have to realize a little bit of tactical movement. You should always be aware of what's going on around you. For instance, when I was a police officer, one of the things that we made sure not to do was, if we're pulling up to traffic stopped at a red light, not to be in the center lane of like a three-lane road. Be either all the way on the right or all the way on the left. Just in case something happens, you get a call, you need to get out of there. You can escape one way or the other and get to the call and try to get somebody helped out. The same idea is true when you go in someplace where you're going to be stopped. Like, let's say you're going to be in a line. You're going to be in a line at say, the bank or your credit union, something like that. Look around and find out, okay, if bad guys come in, what direction are they going to be coming from? If they're already here, where am I going to be in relationship to them? And where should I be able to go? What should I do? It might just be going flat right there on the floor and just becoming a smaller target. You know, what do I do? Do you always have to pull a gun in an armed encounter? The answer is no. You don't always have to, because sometimes that means surely getting your butt into a sling when it comes to soaking up rounds and becoming what's referred to in the industry as a bullet sponge. You do not, by any means, want to become a bullet sponge. You want to avoid that. That is not a good thing. Not a good thing for you. It's a good thing for the bad guy. Let them be a bullet magnet turning into a bullet sponge, which usually when you squeeze that sponge, what comes out? Their blood. That's right, because you got some good shots on them. So you have to realize these sorts of things and just kind of keep heads up. We talked about the color code of mental awareness as put together by Jeff Cooper, and we talked about this level of awareness. So this would be condition yellow, just being aware of your surroundings. If bad guys come in, well, now you're into condition red. If your potential bad guys come in, you elevate to level orange. If you know they're bad guys, that's condition red. If you actually have to pull out your gun and start shooting, it's condition black. Okay, just to recap, condition white is essentially vacation mode. You're on the Seychelles Islands at an all-inclusive resort, and you can chill out then. That's okay. Sleeping is condition white, because nobody sleeps with one eye open well. I do. However, I have superhuman abilities, so I can actually sleep with one eye open. I'm joking, of course. So Once you decide where you can go, what's good cover, what's good concealment, what's a good movement, how do we move? Well, you want to move pretty rapidly and smoothly. You don't want to be tripping over things or people or items or crashing into corners. If you're naturally klutzy, like if you naturally would be walking one direction, turning around the other direction, turn around and bam, slam your head into a pole or a door jamb, you really need to practice tactics quite a bit. I have to say that because my daughter, as lovely as she is a natural-born klutz and needs to practice tactics a little bit more. She is she just walks into stuff or things fall on the floor or things break. She's a little klutzier than the average person, but certainly not as bad as a lot of people that are out there. So just keep in mind, if you're naturally a little bit klutzy, you need to take extra special care when you've got a gun in your hand or if you're practicing tactics. You really do. You need to slow it down and just be smooth with it. So once you get this idea then of tactical movement, cover, and concealment, then you need to understand fields of fire and achieving fields of fire, as in you're moving around a piece of cover to try and open up a little bit more of the world that you might need to be able to shoot at because there's a bad guy down there. Some people refer to that as slicing the pie, as in there's a pie, you're at one angle of it, you need to take one small little slice at a time. Okay, so if you're going to slice this pie, you only want to open up a little bit more and more around the corner, around the edge of this cover. Only enough. Move only as fast as you're willing to fight whatever you see. So don't go really fast. Open up this whole room, and now you got to fight three or four people. Just a little tiny bit. Move out a little tiny bit. Move out a little tiny bit. If you see something, your goal is not to see an entire person. Your goal is to see a portion of a person. Then, if you can decide from that portion whether or not they're a bad guy, you can engage. If not, then you keep opening a little more, and then until you decide who they are. You always need to be very, very aware of what or whom you're shooting. You can't just see someone's shoulder and engage it. That doesn't work out. I was actually in a simunitions course where I was sitting on the backside of a wall. There happened to be a mock wall out of this desert-built house. And you could see just a little bit underneath the bottom of the wall. And I was sitting there, and you could see just a little bit of the back of my thigh, just a little bit of the back of my thigh in the position I was in. And a guy came in, and he was able to get on the ground, go prone, and shoot in that area and hit me in the back of the thigh. All he knew was there was a thigh. Now, this guy was caught up into the game of which and wanted to score points, although that was not the exercise. The exercise was to locate, identify, and if need be, engage. All he did was locate and engage, did not identify at all. And in that situation, I was playing someone who was scared in a corner, hunkering down. So don't get overzealous with this sort of thing. You can practice tactics dry, like as in no ammo, and then you should practice them with airsoft, or if you're able to go to school with simunitions, that's great. Have some protective gear. The same stuff you'd wear for paintball is good, and practice it away. Just realize your goals is to locate, identify, and engage if necessary.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. Now what we're going to do is we're going to go through a little bit of information when it comes to Janet Napolitano, the other woman that I can't stand that's making her way through Washington right now, Sonia Sotomayor. Now, Sonia Sotomayor is President Obama's nominee, his handpicked nominee, to get onto the Supreme Court. And this is the only real thing that I need to know to tell me that I don't like her, and that is that the Brady campaign does. The Brady campaign likes Sonia Sotomayor. Let me read you just a little bit. This is by Paul Helmke, who's the president of the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Again, the only inanimate objects that we know of where an actual group of organizations exist to protest the existence of these inanimate objects. The nomination of Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the U.S. Supreme Court appears to be a positive one for those committed to reducing gun violence in this country. Judge Sotomayor's legal opinions have shown a strong respect for precedent in upholding federal and state gun laws, while her background and experience promise to bring a real-world personal understanding of the effects of gun violence that will be welcome on our nation's highest court. Now, it's interesting if they say a real-world personal understanding. To the best of my knowledge, not a single person in the hierarchy of the Brady campaign, with the exception of Jim and Sarah Brady, who really don't have much to do with the organization so much anymore. They're just kind of these, these focal pieces that would go to some fundraiser or another. But with that exception, most of the people who are anti-gun have never had any real experience being the victim of a violent crime. Most people who have been the victim of a violent crime or had a close family member as the victim of a violent crime are quite pro-Second Amendment and pro-gun. So when he says real-world personal understanding, of course, this is just to inflate his side of the story. Paul Helmke is really a bit of a junior Joseph Goebbels of sorts. Continuing, respect for precedent and understanding the importance of strong gun laws in the real world will be especially important as the Supreme Court is likely to face gun lobby efforts to expand the court's recent Second Amendment ruling in District of Columbia versus Heller into an unbridled right to any gun, any place, anytime. You're damn right. Her experience prosecuting perpetrators of gun crimes in New York City added to her appreciation for the real-world life and death consequences of any effort to roll back gun laws that protect all Americans. Okay. Now, we're going to play a little sound file for you when it comes to protecting all Americans. This is coming from felons who got guns.
The Centers for Disease Control recently completed a review of studies of various types of gun control, waiting periods, registration and licensing, and bans on certain firearms. It could not document that these rules have reduced violent crime. How can this be? Signing the Brady Bill into law didn't help?
Don't tell me this bill will not make a difference. That is not true.
Sorry, the government can't say it has made a difference. One reason is that the bad guys tend to ignore gun laws.
When I had a gun, I didn't care what laws they had. I'm not worrying about the government saying that I can't carry a gun. I'm going to carry a gun anyway.
These maximum security felons in New Jersey scoff at measures like the Brady Law.
I'm not going in the store to buy no gun. So I could care less if they had a background check or not.
I bought it from the street, from a source. There's guns everywhere. If you got money, you get a gun.
A study funded by the Department of Justice confirmed what these prisoners said. Most criminals buy their guns illegally and easily. And get this, the study said the felons say the thing they fear most is not the police, not time in prison, but you, another American who might be armed.
When you're going to rob somebody you don't know, it makes it harder because you don't know what to expect out of them.
It's a reason many states are passing gun uncontrol. They're allowing citizens to carry guns with them. It's called concealed carry or right to carry. And it comforts women like Laura Jones.
It's a safety thing. I feel better knowing I have a way to protect myself.
And here comes another little piece from your favorite mouthpiece and mine, Al Sharpton, who does his very best to get involved in absolutely everything that'll get the cameras on him, whether he knows absolutely anything about it at all. And again, this is the guy that brought us to Juana Brawley. So here's Al Sharpton.
Many people are horrified at the idea of right to carry laws.
That is frightening. Can you imagine just walking up and down the street knowing that 90% of the people you pass has a deadly weapon and you could be their next target?
So that's absolutely right. They have a deadly weapon. You could be their next target if you provoke them into it by being a criminal. So it's absolutely terrifying for the bad guys. Absolutely terrifying. Now, here's a little tidbit by Judge Anthony Napolitano. You can see him streaming on his show on FoxNews.com. So listen to this. This is Judge Anthony Napolitano.
Here is the dirty little secret of the Second Amendment that you probably never learned in public schools. The Second Amendment was written to give you the right to shoot at the government when it becomes a tyranny.
That's right. That's exactly what the Second Amendment was involved, why it was created, so that if you end up with a tyrannical government, you can shoot them if they actually are impeding on your rights and making your life essentially unlivable. If that were the way that it was before the Revolutionary War, if the American settlers had that right, they could have easily gone to England and shot the king and shot Parliament because they were being tyrannical. It was a tyranny against the settlers, the colonizers in America. So there's a little bit of tidbit for you. The prisoners have absolutely no desire to go up against an armed citizen because they don't know what to expect. And quite honestly, the criminals have the right mindset for violence. However, the armed, trained citizen, now let me emphasize trained citizen, they happen to be the nightmare of the bad guys who would do you harm. Okay, the bad guys that are out there, they are the ones who are most afraid of you as an armed citizen because you would, if you're going to be armed, generally speaking, they believe you to be trained. Now, in effect, most people who carry guns haven't done much more than just the simple course, the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hour course. In Arizona, I think it's 16 hours to get a concealed weapons permit, which means learning about the laws, which is what it mostly is. It's about the laws, where you can, where you can't carry, the laws if somebody ends up seeing it, brandishing things such as that, and then a very, very simple test where you actually take the gun out and shoot. Some states don't even require a given test for you to actually press the trigger. Some states don't require it. Other states say to the instructors, well, just make sure that they shoot and they're proficient. Oh, okay. But then you've got to have a pretty good, I guess, quantifier when you certify your instructors. Utah actually does a very good job at that. Utah, it is a state-run system. You don't have to go to your county sheriff or your police chief and go through their personal idea of a rigmarole on it. You actually apply directly to the state. It is called the, the BCI, Bureau of Criminal Investigation, the Utah BCI. They are the same group that actually they certify instructors to be BCI concealed weapons instructors for the state of Utah. You get a stamp, you go through this whole system. They have a very, very good system. And they want you to go to make sure that you hit all these laws, have a lessons plan, submit the lesson plan for approval, do a written test if you like. You don't have to. When I would give those classes on a regular basis, I had a written test. And then have them shoot. And I actually had them shoot probably much more stuff and many more courses of fire, I should say, not much more stuff, many more courses of fire than the average or possibly anybody else who was doing it in Utah, and teaching them a little bit of tactics. I believe that carrying a gun comes with a great responsibility. So the criminals fear armed citizens who have guns because the armed citizens aren't going to try to talk them down, aren't going to point the gun at them and say, put down the gun, turn around, put your hands on your head. The armed citizen's just going to pull their gun and shoot. That's why bad guys are afraid of that. And Al Sharpton said, you know, could you imagine how scary it would be if 90% of the people that you saw on the street were carrying a deadly weapon? Yeah, can you imagine? An armed society is a polite society. If we're going about our day and you have reason to believe that 90% of the people are armed and imagine trained, are they going to be a victim, your next victim? The answer is absolutely not. And, of course, what he was trying to say in that was somebody could just pull out a gun and randomly start shooting. And that's a real big crutch that the anti-gun crowd says. Well, what if somebody who's carrying a gun, they just get mad, and they take that gun out, and they just start shooting because they're mad? That is the weakest argument, the absolute weakest argument. Another one is that they go out and they go looking for trouble. I got to tell you, if you're carrying a gun, you avoid trouble at all costs because you don't want to have to pull the gun out. Problem one is the bad guy. Problem two is when law enforcement arrives. Problem three is criminal and civil liability in the courts. So you don't want to have to use a gun. You'll use it if it require if the situation dictates. But keep in mind, you're criminally and civilly liable when that gun comes out. It might cost you everything, financially speaking. Now, morally, ethically, are you doing the right thing, defending your life or that of someone else by shooting a bad guy? You bet your butt. And enough of this keeps going on where we have enough armed citizens. We keep increasing armed citizens, which is rapidly growing throughout the country. The applications for concealed weapons permits are through the roof in most jurisdictions across the country. If you can get, if your the area in which you live, if they offer a concealed weapons permit, I flat guarantee the applications are through the roof from where they were even a year ago. I flat guarantee it. Unless you live in a place that already has 90% of the people armed, then it's only up 10%. But still, it's up. So if people are carrying guns, bad guys aren't going to want to make them victims. Everybody's going to be their own bit of security. Imagine that. And everybody's going to be trained. If you actually get some real-life training, and I'm a big proponent for a little bit of reform when it comes to what it takes to obtain a concealed weapons permit. For instance, here in the state of Nevada, it's not a difficult process to get a concealed weapons permit. However, it is a ridiculous system. You do take a written test, which is fine. The written test is okay. But then here's the only shooting. You shoot six rounds at 3 meters, all right, 3 yards, 3 yards. At 9 feet, you shoot six rounds. Then you go back to 5 yards, 15 feet, and you shoot 12 rounds. Then you go all the way back to 7 yards, 21 feet, and you shoot, yes, 12 more rounds. So you have a 30-round test, completely untimed. There's no reloading, there's no gun handling, there's no tactics involved whatsoever. And you shoot at what's known in the industry as a B-27 target. That's the kind that looks somewhat like a humanoid silhouette, but not exactly. There's an X in the center. It goes to a 10 ring, a 9, 8, 7, and 7 rings all the way on the outside. Literally, you can be a horrible shot that gets nothing but peripheral hits and pass this test. I have actually passed that shooting test with my eyes shut using my offhand, one-handed. I'm right-handed. I shot with my left hand with my eyes closed and passed that test. That's how simple it is, how ridiculous it is. The thing is, in Nevada, what they do is they pass the law, and then they really have the, I guess the quota, the standards would be a better term, left up to the Nevada Association of Police Chiefs and Sheriffs to decide how the concealed weapons process, the permit process should go. And quite honestly, these bureaucrats in the name of police chiefs and sheriffs have absolutely no idea what they're doing or talking about. They really don't. They got no idea. If they had even the slightest clue, the process would be much, much different. And you can't really lobby the group. As a matter of fact, I live in Nye County, and the sheriff of Nye County is actually the president of the Nevada Chiefs and Sheriffs Association, last I knew. At least last year he was. I don't know if it's an annual thing or what. But I've talked with him before about the, when I've seen him out and about around town, I've talked with him before about, you know, the whole process. And quite honestly, he just doesn't know that much about it and believes that what's happening with it is just fine. Because there hasn't been any major issues with concealed weapons holders in this state at all. There really hasn't been. So they're not really concerned about fixing it until they see that it's broke. Well, I believe that to be rather irresponsible. Just as irresponsible as that person who goes out and buys a gun, gets a applies for, gets very minimal training, gets a concealed weapons permit, and goes out and carries, and never practices with the gun after getting the permit and carrying it every day. Highly, highly, highly irresponsible. If you have a concealed weapons permit, and you haven't dry practiced in the last 2 weeks, you are irresponsible. If you have a concealed weapons permit and you haven't fired any live rounds within the last 6 weeks, you are highly irresponsible. It is a perishable, perishable skill. I used to shoot 5 days a week just by the nature of the job that I had, 4 to 5 days a week. Now I get dry practice in and I actually fire my gun maybe every 3 weeks. And my skills have perished a little bit. They have gone down a little bit. So what I've done is dedicated myself to doing more dry practice. And the dry practice is working because last time I went out shooting, I was back up on it, back up where I should have been. So dry practice, we talked about it before. That is where you actually use the gun in an unloaded configuration to hone and perfect your skills. That's really where improvement comes from. About 70 to 80% of the time that you have a gun in your hand, it should be dry practice. The other 20 to 30% should be at the range, shooting live ammo, and doing your dry practice session, but doing it live. You don't want to practice one way and then go to the range and shoot something totally different. That's stupid. That's just, it doesn't make any sense to do all this practice here and then shoot something completely different. So do your dry practice session at the range, only make it live fire when you do it. So that's really kind of the mantra, the responsibility you need to have. When you become the intended victim from the next bad guy that hones in on you, focuses in on you, you will be trained and able to handle it. That is what a good, honest, armed American is all about. Stay tuned through the break. This is Bill Carnes on RBN with 2A Radio.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back, folks. You know, yesterday I got a caller, I believe his name is Dwayne from Wisconsin, and he was talking about how the United States is a corporation and cited the Act of 1871 when Washington, D.C., was created. And I got to tell you, it really, really intrigued me looking into that. So I looked at a bunch of stuff. Of course, there's a whole bunch of fanfare about it on some of the offshoot sites and certainly on YouTube. And then I actually talked to three different experts in the field, all of whom said, you know what, the United States is incorporated. If you actually go through and read the Act, which I went through and I read portions of the Act, all they did was they incorporated Washington, D.C. Almost every city in the United States is incorporated, so that the city in which the capital resides was an incorporated city, which is a federal jurisdiction not under the control of any other state, doesn't make the country incorporated by any means. I didn't entirely buy that the U.S. is a corporation, and I did quite a bit of research yesterday. I'm going to continue doing. I'm going to do it this weekend. I'm not going to do any more today. It tired me out yesterday. I'm going to do a little bit more research this week, and I want to let you know that I want there to be responsible discussion on this show. If, in fact, something like that comes up, you call me about it, that's fine. I am going to look into it, and I'm going to tell you what I believe I have found out about. And I do not believe by any stretch that the United States is a corporation. Are there a lot of influences that come from other parts of the world? Yes, such as the United States Treasury having a little bit of direction coming from the International Monetary Fund? Yes. Does the United States Treasurer sit on the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Bank? Yes. Is that a conflict of interest? You bet your butt it is. So is there a bunch of horseplay going on? Absolutely there is. Is it good for any of us? No, it is not. Again, you tell me when the last time the U.S. government passed any law that was truly, in the long run, short-term, long-term, everything, beneficial to the citizens of the United States. They are very few and incredibly far between. Now, generally speaking, it is the job of the people in Congress to spend money. And again, I don't even want to call it taxpayer money because they don't really collect that so much in taxes as they spend money that they get free from the Federal Reserve. You know that the average American household is now indebted nearly $546,000 to the U.S. Treasury to pay back to the Federal Reserve? The national debt. The average household, be it a house, an apartment, if your family lives in a tent, whatever, over $500,000. And who's responsible for that? Folks, it's you and it's me. We are responsible for allowing this sort of thing to go on. It's time to start a riot in Washington, D.C. with phone calls, letters, and emails. And let them know, no more. No more. No more. We've absolutely, completely had it with this spending us into the grave. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. Have a good day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Fuel Your Freedoms, the two-way radio show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.